Open.
Major funding for the connection is provided by Macromedia, the software company helping to redefine what the web can be. Available on the web at www.macromedia.com.
I'm Dick Gordon. This is The Connection. A beer and a smoke. They go together like Bogey and Bacall, Oscar and Felix, Norm and Cliff. It's part of the culture. But as an argument to challenge all the medical evidence about secondhand smoke, the cultural claim that people have a right to smoke in a bar or a restaurant has lost a lot of its fire. First came no smoking sections, then no smoking on airplanes, then no smoking in California. Now, New York's mayor, Michael Bloomberg, is calling for a Big Apple ban. No lighting up in bars, in restaurants, even in private clubs. Nowhere where there's an employee who has to breathe this second-hand smoke. Now, bar owners say New York's still crawling back from 9/11 and the resulting economic hardship, and some are saying this could put them under. Others are saying, well, that's blowing a bit of smoke, that cleaner air in bars and restaurants will bring non-smokers back to the nightlife. Connection listeners, is there any reason why people should still be allowed to smoke in a bar or a restaurant? What are the point? Does a smoker have any rights at all? Our number is 1-800-423-8255. That's 1-800-423-TALK. Now, we will be talking with a number of people throughout the hour, but let's start with someone who knows this firsthand. Kelly Corona is bartender at a place called Big Bar on the Lower East Side, near 7th Avenue and 2nd. Is that right, Kelly?
It's 7th Street, between 1st and 2nd Avenue.
Were you working last night?
I was, yes.
So you were home a little late?
Yes.
Thanks for getting up to talk to us this morning.
You're welcome.
Big Bar's not really a very big bar, is it?
No, it's absolutely tiny.
How many people when it's full?
25, maybe, when it's full.
And of the 25, on an average night, Kelly, how many people are smoking?
24.
Does that include you?
Yes. Yes, it does.
You're a smoker.
I am.
Now, what's the talk at the bar? What are people saying about this?
Well, I mean, you know, people think that this is a ridiculous proposal, simply because, you know, it sounds to a lot of folk coming in last night, and, you know, I had this conversation over and over, that Mayor Bloomberg is trying to make a big impression on the city, and he's doing it in a way, you know, that's very visible. You know, that's what people think. And you know, no one's going to stop smoking anyway, no matter what he does.
What would happen to the big bar if the ban was put in place tomorrow?
It would make my job miserable. It really would. First of all, there couldn't be any trust between, you know, a bartender and a patron, because I would have to charge each person for their drink the minute that I put the drink down. I couldn't run tabs anymore, because if someone goes out to smoke a cigarette, I can't be, you know, policing them. They could just walk off down the street, which they do.
Huh.
Yeah, and that's just one thing. There are many, many, many things that would happen because of that.
Kelly, if you weren't a smoker, if you were a non-smoker, would you have a different attitude about this?
No. No, I wouldn't.
Why?
Because I choose to work in a bar. You know, this is what I choose to do. You know, there have been times in my life where I was not smoking, and I still worked in a bar. It's just something that you know going into it. There are non-smoking bars. I don't have a problem with a non-smoking bar. There's one near my house in Brooklyn. You know, people who don't smoke go there. I think there's enough business and enough room for everyone. And furthermore, you know, New York is such a pedestrian society. If on a normal Saturday night you're driving, oh, I don't know, 20, 30, 40, 50 people out on the street at the same time to smoke cigarettes, don't you know that people on quiet blocks that do have bars, you know, will start complaining about their quality of life issues? People are loud, people are screaming, they're drunk, they're on the street smoking cigarettes, and, you know, I don't think that this has been thought through properly.
Kelly, stay on the line with us if you can. I want to bring Steve Sherman into the conversation.
Sure.
Steve, you're a bartender at Houston's Restaurant, Park Avenue and 27th, is that right?
Yeah, that's correct.
What do you think of the proposal for the ban?
You know, I've got to say, Mr. Gordon, I'm 100% fully for it. I think it would absolutely improve my workspace environment, and it would increase my business.
Now, is that because you work in a restaurant? I'm trying to get an understanding of the different place that you're coming from, comparing you to Kelly here.
Well, yes. Generally, the kind of environment we're creating is more of a restaurant. We do close at the same time the dining room does. It's more of a, we try and make it a waiting area where people are waiting for tables and heading to the dining room. But we also do have a distinguishable after-work bar crowd. We get a really strong crowd during lunchtime in the afternoon and certainly during dinner time. My bar is probably about the same size as Kelly's. We have about maybe 27, 28 seats. In addition to, though, we do have a lounge area.
Now, you're not a smoker, right?
No, I'm not a smoker. Actually, I'm an actor, so my voice and my instrument, if you will, is very important. So,
do you think it suffers?
Yes, I do. Actually, I have been at Houston since we opened. It'll be 3 years ago this month, and I have. It's the first bar I've worked in that was a smoking bar, as opposed to the two places I'd worked at before that, where smoking was not allowed and people went outside. But I've definitely noticed a change in my range. I'm a singer also. In fact, at one time I was working on a boat and made my living as a singer. So I've definitely noticed a decrease in my singing range. My voice has certainly deepened a bit.
I'd like to hear from both of you about whether or not the circumstances we're talking about, New York City, is a part of this particular debate. We're not talking about a smoking ban in the bars and restaurants of Albany. This is New York City. Does that, Kelly, make it different?
I think it does. I mean, I think when you're dealing with an urban area, and you have a certain level, you know, I don't want to sound pompous when I say this, but, you know, there's a certain level of freedoms and sophistication, and you want to go and sit and hear jazz, and along with jazz and a glass of whiskey, smoking is legal. Let's not forget that. This is a legal thing to do. We're not talking about smoking pot, you know, in a little place in Amsterdam. This is New York City. These are the freedoms that we have. You know, I fully agree with Steve. You know, after a whole night of 25 people in a very small space, not Houston's. I think I remember that the bar is very small, but it's also part of the whole open restaurant. It might be cordoned off, but my place is really small. You know, I leave there and sometimes really have a headache from. I mean, I'm sure that I ingest packs upon packs of cigarettes, and I think that he has a point in. You know, the things that he says, I agree with him. However, go to work in a non-smoking place, you know.
Steve, do you have that choice?
Well, in a sense, I do, actually. There's a couple things Kelly mentioned. As far as New York City goes, I think that, you know, definitely, you know, I mean, I live in New York City. I love this town, especially because living here, I feel like I'm in the center of everything. And I think that we are an example as a major city to all other cities in this country. And I think that a change like this would certainly set a societal tone for many other cities. Although Kelly mentions freedom, and I think that that's kind of ironic because we're talking about a practice here that is based more on addiction than freedom or choice. You know, and she mentions pot smoking too. I think that, you know, certainly that is, of course, illegal in this country, although those that do it tend to do it very discreetly and in places, you know, that are private in their own homes and things like that. I think for New York City it will... It's definitely going to be it's all about setting a new societal norm. It's about letting people, you know. I mean, we're talking about something. I mean, in a way, it's kind of comedic. I mean, we're talking about a practice here that, you know, is killing people. It is, you know, one of the leading causes for disease and cancer in our country. But, you know, Kelly's very right. I mean, I work in a very well-ventilated bar. I mean, we have a ventilation system, but I can certainly start to notice by the end of the month when we need the service again, because the filters are getting full and the smoke is just wafting behind the bar. And when you leave at night, you do have a headache and your throat is dry and you're just, it just makes you feel awful. It's, you know, the things that we're inhaling. I was reading an article the other day that was saying that, you know, secondhand smoke, no pun intended, is really kind of a secondary issue, because that smoke that you're breathing in that has been ingested through a filter into one's lungs and then passed out, but the real serious consideration that has to be taken for the smoke that's coming off the end of one cigarette that isn't filtered or ingested at all.
And, Kelly, when I hear you describing your locking up Big Bar at, I don't know, 2:30 in the morning and with a headache and a sort of lung full of yours and other people's smoke, I hear you could be making the argument that Steve's making here.
Well, I understand and respect where he's coming from. However, the bottom line is smoking is a legal activity. And both of us are serving alcohol to people, and the alcohol has to be filtered through a person's liver and their kidneys. But frankly, you know, I'm not a doctor, and it's not up to me to be the one to say, you know, you really shouldn't be drinking because yada, yada, yada. You know, I mean, if someone asked me for a drink, I mean, first of all, as bartenders, and I know Steve knows this, in New York City, we have enough responsibility. You know what I mean? I have a lot of responsibility. I have to look someone in the eye and decide whether I think that they've had too much to drink. It's illegal for me to serve someone who's already intoxicated. So
you don't want to crack the whip over somebody who's standing at the back trying to sneak a cigarette.
Exactly. I also, you know, this makes a huge difference, but I'm the only employee at my bar. So when there's 25 people in there, or
right,
when maybe 30 or 40 people crush in there, I'm still the only one working there.
Just hang on half a sec, Kelly. I want to bring Bill into the conversation. Bill's calling in from Boston. Hey, Bill.
Hi, how are you doing?
You know New York City. You're a musician?
Yes.
Tell me about your time in bars there.
Well, I've traveled down to play quite a lot. I used to play at the Knitting Factory a lot and the Wetlands. And both places are like non-ventilated basement kind of situations. And you'd come out of there just, you know, reeking, and you'd have a headache the next day from smoking. I just think that it would be really very positive to have no smoking in some of these places.
What about the argument that's made that smoke in those places is part of the atmosphere, and if you remove the smoke, you might remove some of the patrons as well, Bill?
I don't know. I can't really buy that much. I mean, I'm living in Boston. I go to Brookline in Boston, has no smoking. I just went last night to a packed bar, and actually people talk about how great it is. I mean, even smokers, they just go outside, and it's not that big of a deal for them. And nobody comes out smelling like a pack of cigarettes.
Kelly Corona, you think this is a done deal? You think that there's a chance to push back against Bloomberg?
Well, I mean, the chance to push back is a really difficult one. First of all, getting bartenders and bar owners out of bed, which is where I'm sitting right now, to go to a protest is almost impossible. You know, I think the other two guests that you have very valid points. You know, but nobody's really talking about the issue of also, you know, my neighbors, all of the neighbors on 7th Street, they know the telephone number of the bar, and we'll call up and say, hey, Kelly, you know, get that idiot off your front sidewalk, you know, because I'm trying to go to sleep. No one's speaking about the fact that we have neighborhoods in the same, you know, area as these bars, and what is this going to do to, you know, the quality of life, you know.
I know that does happen in Brookline, that they get complaints about people being outside, too.
We have to take a break. Kelly Corona and Steve Sherman, thanks for getting up to help us start off the program.
Absolutely. Thank you very much.
Kelly works at Big Bar on the Lower East Side. Steve Sherman at Houston's Restaurant, Park Avenue and 27th. The quality of life is what we're talking about. To smoke or not to smoke, to sit beside someone else who's smoking or not smoking. And should this be regulated? 1-800-423-8255. I'm Dick Gordon. This is The Connection from NPR. You're listening to The Connection from National Public Radio. My name's Dick Gordon. We're talking about smoking in New York City, bars and restaurants, a proposal from the mayor to ban it, and the debate that's triggering, and also trying to look a little bit beyond New York City at what the decision in Gotham will mean for the rest of the country. And we turn now to David Saltonstall, who's City Hall Bureau Chief for the New York Daily News and is covering the story. David, thanks for joining us.
Thanks for having me.
And Dr. Diane Stover, who's chief of pulmonary medicine at Memorial Sloan Kettering Cancer Center, is also on the line. Hi, doctor.
Good morning. Thanks for having me this morning.
David, let me start with you if I can. This came up in the summer, I understand. The mayor made the proposal then. Where are we in the sort of practical part of it? Is this a vote or a decision that's coming soon?
Well, the mayor would like it to be soon. There has been, at this point, one public hearing on the issue. It happened a couple of weeks ago. It was very well attended, as you can imagine. There is going to be another public hearing, which is yet to be scheduled. And the mayor has asked that the legislation be passed on November 21st, if at all possible, which just happens to be the Great American Smokeout Day. So that's what we know about the schedule. I think most people think November 21st is too soon and that this will probably drag on for a little while longer, but it's certainly on the fast track.
Give us your sense, David, of just the tone of the debate. Are the two sides listening to each other? I mean, we had Kelly and Steve to start the program, and they're very respectful of each other's views, despite the fact that as bartenders in separate bars, one favors smoking, one doesn't.
Mm-hmm. I think they are listening. I don't know that they're necessarily hearing, which can be different things sometimes. They're clearly coming at this from two very separate points of view. If you listen to the mayor, for him, this is a cut and dry issue of public health and worker safety. And, you know, he says over and over again, you have every right to damage your own health by smoking, but you have no right to do damage to others. And the science is unequivocal. He certainly has a lot of data at his disposal suggesting that secondhand smoke is indeed dangerous. On the other side, it's an equally stark economic picture for many of these small bars and restaurants in particular that are gravely concerned that this would be a real death blow to their business, no pun intended. New York City's economy is not great right now. It is still very much sort of a wounded city. A lot of people didn't go out for a long time, and they're starting to go back out now. It's a bad time for them to have to absorb something else. It's for them a real economic issue that could cause real pain.
Dr. Stover, this question of rights, if the smokers try to argue their case on the basis of rights, it's a pretty comfortable place for you to argue the other side, isn't it?
Yes. And, you know, while smokers have rights, non-smokers also have rights, and the smoker has a right to make the decision to damage his health. And as mentioned, there's unequivocal evidence that smoking is a very significant health risk. But non-smokers shouldn't be forced to also damage their health, particularly if they've made the decision not to smoke. And let me just give you a few statistics. This is from the American Cancer Society of the number of deaths from secondhand smoke. 37,000 deaths per year in the United States are due to secondhand smoke from heart disease, 3,000 from lung cancer, 13,000 from other cancers, and in children, a million ear infections are thought to be due to secondhand smoke. 20% of asthma in children is thought to be due to secondhand smoke, a significant number of pneumonia and bronchitis as well. So there's a significant amount of health risks to the non-smoker who has made the decision not to smoke.
But a perspective from you're a New Yorker, and if smoker wants to go to a bar or a patron wants to go to a bar where there's smoke, it's not like they're going in without knowing that evidence. It's not like the debate over secondhand smoke is still being rationally argued on both sides. I mean, your facts are burned into the consciousness. Everybody knows that, and they just do it anyway. You know what I mean?
You mean the non-smokers?
I'm saying smokers and non-smokers mm-hmm. sit in a bar knowing the risks and still choose to go there.
Yes, but the non-smoker shouldn't be forced not to go there because they're smoke.
Right.
I think that's my view. smokers have rights. They have made the decision to smoke. And if it's the decision not to smoke in a particular place, because they've made the decision to smoke, they should also be willing to respect that that rule.
All right, yeah, Dr. Stover and David, if I can just ask you to hang with us for a bit while we turn to some calls. We're going to Virginia Beach now, and Sherry's on the line. Hi, Sherry.
Hi, thanks for taking my call.
Yeah.
Well, my comment pretty much is that I smoked for 15 years, and in order to stop, I literally went through almost a week of cold sweats, and I couldn't stay awake. So it was it really was a total withdrawal. And like the doctor was just saying, you know, the reality is this is proven to kill you. Secondhand smoke is proven to kill you. So
right.
We're talking about quality of life here. Why should I be putting my life in jeopardy if I want to go out and have a drink after I had the chutzpah and the guts to work through that horror and quit smoking? I think New York City is a great place to start. If they came to Virginia Beach and Norfolk, I might consider going out in the evening on a more regular basis. You know, just
there's smoke in the bars around your home, Sherry.
Oh yeah, it's horrific. Just like everybody says, you have to strip yourself down at the door, in order to wash your clothes the next morning.
And if New York made the switch, would it make it a lot easier for folks in your area to do it too?
Well, it's true. I go to New York on business occasionally, and it is such a melting pot. I think it would be a wonderful place for it to start. If New York can do it, if New York can pull themselves out of that horror that went on, they can certainly pull themselves back from smoking, and they can be the great example for the rest of the country, like they were in the past.
Thanks for your call, Sherry.
Thank you.
David Saltonstall at the New York Daily News. Is the debate in New York being seen in those bigger picture terms that Sherry's talking about?
I think absolutely. I mean, if you talk to national anti-smoking advocates, they are clearly focused on what's going on in New York, and I think they see, you know, a great potential here to gain an enormous foothold. I mean, in addition to being, you know, New York, the town that parties all night and all day too sometimes, it's also the world headquarters of the Philip Morris Company. You know, this is taking place right in their backyard. You know, they can't be happy, and Bloomberg delights in torturing them. The way the current bill is written, the 1995 bill that did require separate smoking areas,
right.
The Philip Morris Company was granted a waiver whereby they were allowed to essentially consider their office tower a tobacco shop. It means that you can smoke in that building anywhere, no matter what office you're in, whether you're walking in the hallway. Bloomberg's new bill would do away with that waiver and force them to go smoke-free as well. And he delights in pointing that out.
So is Philip Morris pushing back hard on this proposed legislation?
Well, they're clearly not happy. But interestingly enough, they are not pushing back very publicly if they're pushing back. I think they realize that if this becomes a battle between City Hall and Big Tobacco,
they're dead. Right.
So they would much rather have this cast as a battle between small bar owners and small business owners against City Hall, which it is. I mean, you know, it is that. But I think especially, you know, even some of the bar owners agree that, you know, we don't want their help because it'll only hurt us.
Let's go to Manchester, New Hampshire. Dan's on the line. Hi, Dan.
How do you do, Mr. Gordon?
Thanks for calling in.
You're welcome. My comment is this. I was born back in the 30s, and prohibition of alcohol by a constitutional amendment by our Congress, and then the repeal of it, was still a hot topic when I was a boy. And I remember my grandparents and my father talking about it and talking about how the things that led up to it were similar to what I'm hearing now about smoking. People that were against it said it was bad for your health, and people got drunk and hurt other people, and people in favor of it said it's our right to drink alcohol. And eventually it went from city to city and state to state, and it got so big that our Congress got involved in it. Now, you see, we're talking about smoking, which isn't a crime. You don't get arrested for smoking. Tobacco's not illegal. But it's starting to affect millions and millions of people in this country, and it's a big controversy on both sides.
You know, where do you come down on it, Dan? I mean, are you a smoker?
Well, I quit 20 years ago.
So if you go into a bar that's full of smoke, do you stay there long or do you look for some other place to sit?
To be perfectly honest with you, I feel like lighting up a cigar, and it doesn't really bother me. I sort of like the smell of it, but I decided to quit because I'm getting older and I thought it was a thing to do. But every once in a while I sneak a cigar, but don't tell my wife that.
I won't, I promise. But should they ban it in the bars?
I think it's to the point where it's going to end up in Congress. I think that's the only fair thing to do to everybody concerned. I think this state by state, why should Mayor Bloomberg have a right to tell me if I come to New York for the weekend to see a show that I can't go down to a bar and have a smoke? You know, I don't live in New York. Mayor Bloomberg personally doesn't mean too much to me.
Dr. Stover, would it be better for the anti-smoking lobby if this just went straight to Congress rather than being played out in each municipality and town across the country?
I think it would be fairer to everybody in the United States on both sides, and it would end the controversy. They'd either make a constitutional amendment or they'd make a national law, and that would be the end of that, and you'd know where you could smoke and where you couldn't, whether you went to New York or New Hampshire or Oshkosh, Wisconsin.
Dr. Stover, can I hear you on that?
Yeah. Well, you know, I don't think that's an easy question to answer. I think each state has to make their own rules and regulations, hopefully based on examples of other states. And, you know, I'd like to bring up California, which has implemented these no smoking rules in major public places. And we have seen an impact on the health. We've seen a decrease in the number of smokers. And the first state to show a decrease in lung cancer among women. So, you know, you would hope by example that each state would make their own rules. But, you know, personally myself, I would love to see a national effort to ban smoking in all public places. And you would hope that the end result would be that there would be less smoking among smokers. Eventually, they would stop smoking. Therefore, their children would not smoke. And this would, you know, set off a chain reaction in the best of all possible worlds. And, you know, states like California, Massachusetts, Florida have begun that, and we've seen an impact on the health of people in these states.
Dr. Stover, thanks for being with us.
You're welcome. Thank you for having me.
Dr. Diane Stover is Chief of Pulmonary Medicine at Memorial Sloan Kettering Cancer Center. Let's bring Art Spiegelman into the conversation, icon of New York's culture scene. And Art, are you smoking right now?
I'm about to light up now that you called my name. Hi.
Hi. If you want us to pause while you get one going there, we can do
it. It's okay. I've gotten very good at doing two things at once now.
What do you think of this, Art?
Oh, I feel so besieged. I have no brief for smoking per se, saying that this is... I'm hardly going to come here and tell you that I think smoking is good for you. On the other hand, what's happened over the last 10 years seems so authoritarian to me, I guess, you know. And as a result, I've been spending a lot more time in Europe since my friends from Europe are less and less interested in coming to New York as this becomes an issue.
Let's take it apart for a bit here. Now, you work at The New Yorker. There's no smoking at the office, is there?
I never go up there. In fact, as we're speaking, I'm sitting in my raw office where my wonderful children's book editor from HarperCollins has come to visit me here because most buildings I would ordinarily go to discuss things with editors are smoke-free. So we come to the one smoke-free zone in New York, which is my studio.
You're listening to The Connection from National Public Radio. So, Art, does your world get a little smaller and smaller?
Well, you know, I just had to open it up with airline tickets, you know. I'm still not trained to the full license that exists in Europe. Of all places, Germany is so much more relaxed than America at this point, you know. I can't get used to it, but you get into an elevator, and people say, oh, there's 3 minutes in the elevator, there's time to light up. And I'm well-trained by having been a citizen of the U.S. of A. for a long time now, but it would never occur to me to do such a thing.
Yeah, I know. I've sat on an airplane in, where was I, in Tajikistan, and I would guess about three-quarters of the people were smoking as the plane took off, and I'm just sitting around looking at it like, Wow. I thought the whole plane would blow up if this happened.
Well, no, there are all these unintended side effect consequences. Like, I don't know if you've noticed on airplanes, but you tend to get colds and sick a lot more than before, and that's because they don't keep the air filters filtration system as high now that they don't have to screen the smoking out.
Do you smoke in bars, Art?
I do.
And if the mayor has his way, what happens?
I smoke at home with a bottle of gin over a table with some friends. It's definitely a curtailment. At this point, I found the few smoke-easy restaurants that are willing to have me comfortably where I can be relaxed about this whole thing. I found that in Southern California, at least, it's a lot easier because there's so much outdoors there and there's so much of the year when you can use the outdoors. That it's never become a problem even for the people I know out there who are
smokers.
Bigger smokers than I, even if that's possible. And here, on the other hand, there's even discussion of, well, outdoors, you can't have a cigarette in the outdoors part of a restaurant. And it's a clue that this has a lot more to do with psychosocial issues than health issues, ultimately.
David Saltonstall, is that how the debate is being framed as well? That it goes beyond workplace safety.
Yeah, I mean, certainly that's how one side would frame it. I mean, it's about choice.
Incidentally, could I just say I'm not trying to even frame a debate. I'm only responding to the feeling of besiegement that surrounded me for a habit that I developed in all innocence 30 years ago.
Mm-hmm.
And incidentally, I've tried to stop several times, once for a year and a half, and everybody I knew was begging me to start again because I'd turned so foul. And it never got easier for me a year and a half into it. And, you know, I did this book, Mao's. It took 13 years, and I say only half in jest that it would have taken 11 and a half if I hadn't stopped smoking for a year and a half. My work life had turned to absolute was torn to shreds. My day would consist of getting up and not having a cigarette, and it never changed.
Connection listeners, we have to take a break. Art, you can do what you want with that break. Stay with us, though. And David Saltonstall, I want to come back to you when we return. Our number is 1-800-423-8255. New York City debates smoking in bars and restaurants. A city that parties all night now does it with no hazy air in the bars, clean lights. Not yet. My name's Dick Gordon. This is The Connection from NPR.
Funding for The Connection is made possible by Macromedia, the software company helping to redefine what the web can be. Available on the web at www.macromedia.com.
From Boston University, this is WBUR, Boston's NPR news station. We're funded by...
You're listening to The Connection from National Public Radio. We're talking about smoking in New York City. With me on the program, David Saltonstall. He's City Hall Bureau Chief for the New York Daily News. He's covering the story. And Art Spiegelman's still with us. He's the Pulitzer Prize-winning artist with The New Yorker and a committed smoker. Our number is 1-800-423-8255. David, let me just start with you because when it comes right down to deciding, you know, who's in, who's out, you got people like the vets who've been smoking for 30, 40 years who want to go for a beer and a smoke and sit together, not outside in the middle of winter. And that's always where it gets hard for the politicians to say, sorry, you too.
Yeah, I mean, you talk to some of those vets, some of whom served in World War II, and they remember the days when, you know, cigarettes were provided by the government as part of their rations. And they've been smoking ever since. So, you know, for them, this has really come full circle. But yes, I mean, that is a group of people. You know, this would also ban smoking in private clubs, which in addition to, you know, all the swank places on Fifth Avenue, includes a lot of American Legion halls, VFW posts, the Elks Lodge, which, you know, while they don't really exist in Manhattan, are all over the outer boroughs. So they're not happy. But, you know, I think ultimately if this passes, I think what you end up with are some smokeasies, as they're calling them now, places like private clubs, small, out-of-the-way joints, where smoking will just continue, and the city will try and control it. But, you know, no city has enough inspectors to chase down a problem like that.
This would be like Amsterdam turning a blind eye to people who want to smoke a little pot in one of their bars. Technically, it's illegal, but everybody does it, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, no, I think, you know, if this passes, New York smokers will find a way and find their little havens.
Why
and I don't know whether...
I'm sorry. In a city as cosmopolitan as New York that invites people from all over the world where smoking is still... a possible activity that's one that's several steps short of smoking marijuana. Why should we set up something quite so draconian? Doesn't it seem possible to set up something that involves clean enough air, people volunteering for the hardship duty of being a bartender in a smoking section of a well-ventilated place? Why does it have to be this way, short of the grander public health and puritanical aspects of this issue?
Let me give you a kind of a personal answer to that, Art. I smoked for years. I don't smoke now, but if I sit long enough in a bar with a friend who's smoking, I'll reach over and have one. And part of the argument is that if those smokes aren't there, my health is saved.
Well,
it goes back to what you were saying before, that it's not really about secondhand smoke, but about getting people to stop smoking.
No, and some of the arguments have gotten so strange. Like, there's a piece in the Times on the op-ed page talking about the secondhand smoke that's attached to clothing causing health problems. Now, I'm sorry, but unless my kid eats my clothes, I can't believe that that's a real issue. It's just marching grandly in the direction that we've been set off in that seems to have more to do with... controlling what people put in their bodies. Like, after they take all us smokers away, the fat people are in big trouble.
Well, and talk about getting people to quit. I mean, one of the other things that's been sort of lost here is that the other thing that Bloomberg did this summer was he raised the tax, the city tax on a pack of cigarettes, $1.50. So now a pack of cigarettes in New York City costs $7.50.
Or in a bar, $9.
Yeah, or in a bar, $9. Consumption, well, not consumption, purchases are way down in New York City, and we know that by looking at the tax revenue that comes from cigarettes.
Soon the only people who be able to afford cigarettes are hotshot cartoonists like Spiegelman and mayors.
Well, hotshot cartoonists like Spiegelman get their cigarettes as they travel duty-free elsewhere, you know?
Yeah, no. Yeah, it's an open question whether people are actually quitting as a result of this, but, you know, there seems to be some evidence that there is, you
well,
know,
it
calls.
It creates genuine impediments. I think that I read some article about the increased rolling your own fad that's coming into being now. Certainly people are buying cigarettes on the internet, out of state. We're moving in a direction of prohibition, which was part of the conversation right before I jumped in. And like prohibition, it seems like a very puritanical move toward controlling behavior. It just seems that there should be a way short of like having me free to blow smoke at somebody in an elevator to accommodate my willingness to go to hell in a handbasket. And that actually is part of, by gosh, what America is all about. You know? without having to take some kind of crazed libertarian stance, this seems very, very punishing and meant to be punishing. You know, when I was out in L.A. a few years back when this was really getting going, I finally get out of the airport. I'm finally allowed to have a cigarette. I light up, and five guards come running over. I'm outside. I'm in Los Angeles, and they say, oh, no, you can only smoke between doors C and D. This plane's taken off right behind me. There's cars all over that freeway. My cigarette has, like, just panicked every uniformed person within a half mile who, with great satisfaction, was telling me I could only smoke between these two doors. That's what I mean by feeling besieged and feeling punished.
Troublemaker, Art Spiegelman. Art, I got to let you go. We want to bring some calls in. Thanks for being with us.
Thanks a lot. I'll smoke them if I got them.
I bet you
Take
will.
Care.
Art Spiegelman, Pulitzer Prize winning artist with New Yorker magazine. Our number is 1-800, excuse me, 423-8255 to Nashville, Tennessee, and Claire's on the line. Hi, Claire.
Hi.
Thanks for calling.
Oh, thanks. Well, thanks for taking my call, and I love your show. My brother worked as a bartender, and one point that I keep hearing people talking about or not talking about is, I mean, I do think it goes back to the health of workers in that not only is it a health risk, but these are the very same institutions that offer absolutely no benefits. Now, if they did offer health benefits and were willing to pay for, you know, long-term lung problems, my brother had chronic lung problems. It hasn't developed into cancer. He did finally leave that job situation and is off selling boats, but he always had hoarseness. He always had to clear his throat. And so I'm just thinking, also, I don't know how it is in New York. I know that there are a lot of professional bartenders that are older, but a lot of times these are the jobs that are higher paying, the ones that young adults and people who might otherwise be stuck with minimum wage jobs
right.
take. Because of that, it's the only way they can actually make enough money to live, and yet there are no health benefits and this health risk. So that's the point I wanted to make.
Yeah, and that's actually the point that the mayor keeps returning to when everybody or anybody challenges his plan for a smoking ban. Claire, thanks for your call.
You're welcome.
Let's bring Hilly Crystal into the conversation. Hilly's owner of CBGB. It's a punk rock club in the Bowery. And Hilly, fair amount of smoke in your club. We're not talking about veterans here, are we?
No, these are a lot of young people. I don't think there's as much smoking as there was many years ago. I remember years ago I managed the Village Vanguard, and, it was back in the late 50s, early 60s, a lot of smoke there. Here, I think people are smoking much less. I personally don't smoke. I haven't smoked in 30-something years. But I'm very skeptical about a lot of these surveys since I was in marketing a bit, and I see how they're done and what the questions are asked and what kind of doctors, the doctors that their opinions, and they're all different. And
Hilly, let me ask you, though, if the law were to pass and you were, as a bar owner, given the responsibility of telling kids to put their cigarettes out, is that a responsibility that would be easy for you to do?
I don't see any problem with it, no.
So that's
I think
not...
if everybody else did it, I think it would be good if people didn't smoke. It would be good if people didn't drink, too. Seriously. I mean, it would be. And it would be very good if people didn't drive cars. They wouldn't get killed.
So
driving, at least.
So where do you go with this, Hilly? Are you saying that you're not really too sure, but you're sort of with the mayor?
I don't think it should be done, personally. I don't think it's the way to do it. I think there probably are other ways if people thought a little more carefully, people in charge. Maybe they could make it some ways more profitable for certain bars to declare we are a non-smoking bar. And give them some benefits as far as tax write-offs, as a promotion. So a lot of people would go to the bars that said we are not allowing smoking at all. Maybe that would be the way. The incentive for a bar owner not to have smoking.
Hilly, thanks for being with us.
All right.
Hilly Crystal, owner of CBGB, punk rock club in the Bowery. You can still smoke there, but you may not be able to smoke there in a few weeks' time or whenever this is supposed to happen. The more that I hear from different points of view, David Saltonstall, the more that I get the idea that, as you were kind of suggesting a little bit earlier, there will be some compromise here for the mayor to get it through, right?
Well, probably. I mean, I think most people believe that something will be passed, some legislation, whether it's the current one or something different is a little unclear. But, you know, it's a very slippery slope when you start talking about changing the bill because right now the bar owners are dead set against it. The restaurant owners are, you know, kind of back and forth, depends who you talk to. But one thing the restaurant owners really are afraid of is this sort of uneven playing field that might open up if bars are allowed to smoke but restaurants are not, or private clubs are allowed to smoke and restaurants are not. Because what they don't want to see happen is patrons come, sit down, have a nice meal, and then, you know, instead of paying for a dessert and an after-dinner drink, they go across the street to the bar so they can have a smoke at the same time. So once you start making exceptions in this bill and pulling out one class versus another, a whole lot of people who are now sort of supporting it they walk, you know, because then it becomes an unfair playing field for them, and they don't want to see it happen.
You're listening to The Connection from National Public Radio. Let's just bring in, before we close the program, Christy, who's calling in from Boston. Hi, Christy.
Hi.
You're a New Yorker?
Yes, I'm originally from New York, but I now live in Boston.
And?
And I think the point I want to get across is that we're missing the main point, that this is a public health concern. And I am 28 years old, and I am a 3-year cancer survivor.
Congratulations.
And, thank you. And it's hard for me when I go to a bar. The effect that the smoke has on me lasts for at least 3 days. The shortness of breath, I cough, and it's just, it's hard. And I understand that smokers feel that they have rights too. My mother smokes, my brother smokes, but
around you?
No, that's the thing.
In
the privacy,
I bet not.
No. In the privacy of your own home, do what you want to do. But once you set out into the public, you're affecting other people.
Christy, there's a big void here that New York is contemplating, and stepping off into that void is, would people like you who don't smoke and don't want to be around smokers fill up that economic gap that might be left by the smokers who don't go to the bars? Would you go back out to bars and restaurants that you now don't go to if the law changed?
Yes. I definitely feel that. Right now, I know a caller earlier on mentioned it in Brookline, that the bars are smoke-free. And mostly I've heard such positive things about just being able to be in an environment when there's no smoke. And that one particular bar that I'm thinking of is always packed. It's
right.
Always full. They do not lack patrons. People still go to the bar, and those that want to smoke step right outside, and they come back in. The amount of time it takes to smoke a cigarette, it's maybe 2 minutes outside.
Especially when it's cold. Christy,
exactly.
Thanks for your call.
No problem.
Just quickly back to David. When we spoke earlier in the program, David, about New York's responsibility as an example, when the actual debate is played out, is that part of it, in your view?
New York as an example to others?
Yeah,
sure.
I mean, New Yorkers are going to decide this for New Yorkers, but very aware that the rest of the nation's watching, right?
I think that's true. You know, I mean, but at the end of the day, I don't think that's really going through people's minds when they talk about what this is going to do to their business. I think that's more an issue for the national advocates. And, you know, I mean, it should be stated that, I mean, New York is not recreating the wheel here. I mean, something like 400 municipalities around the country have already gone this route.
But with the exception of places in California, no big cities. I mean, no Chicago, no Boston, no Miami yet.
That's
right?
True, although Chicago and Boston are now both talking about it, and New York City is already taking credit for that, too.
Bad times for smokers. David, thanks for being with us on the program.
Thank you.
David Saltonstall, City Hall Bureau Chief for the New York Daily News, winner, incidentally, of the 2001 George Polk Award for Local Reporting. Connection listeners, if you would like to continue the conversation in the privacy of your own home using one hand or two on the keyboard, you can find us on our forums page. We are at theconnection.org. My name's Dick Gordon. This is The Connection.
Funding for The Connection is made possible by Macromedia, the software company helping to redefine what the web can be.
This is WB.